all the way to Bob.
How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah,
good.
Good.
Glad you found the show.
Yeah, fine.
How are you doing? How come your paperwork's laid all the way from 06? That's too far. We're signing stuff we don't even remember.
You can't get any more done.
I can sit over here. No.
Then he's going to come up with a sob story that he don't have no money to fix the dam.
Well, Mr. Roth, your hearing aid is on today.
How you doing?
Uh-oh. Well, here's number two.
We got the big shot here.
He's going to catch it, too.
Hi. Good to see you.
We might all leave now.
They come in force.
You bring a check with you?
A check?
No. That's all we want to see you about is the money.
How much do you think they're worth? $3,000. $3,000. Thanks.
Where'd you find the pretty purple shirt?
That's not where I was going.
We've got a signing sheet over there.
Yes, sir.
I like to wear khaki shirt every day.
Getting an agenda? Just kind of checking people up.
Yeah. I've been doctor's office every day.
Should we let people know there's water in the fridge?
Yeah, we can. We have some water in the refrigerator if anybody would like some.
Water.
Huh? You know, yeah, a bottle of water. And coffee in the back, sweets.
Some brown.
Brown water, yeah.
For sale.
Can't have a permit to get it, but. Cooler. I think it's warm. Don't y'all say it's warm? Mm-hmm.
I got my own in the truck. My truck's in the shop.
I went into the office one day and was laying on the couch making the bills there. I broke my glasses and we had him laying across his eyes.
How's he doing?
Not good again.
I know he is. About once a week, the niece would send out an email. Okay. I got one a week or two.
Well,
he said warm spring.
A week ago, he said he'd leave. And now I don't know.
This chair don't shut me up.
Well, actually, I had
straight
a
enough. It's a 2x4 main.
Night.
Those all here.
It looks like my recliner.
In August, yeah.
Well, it's 2:00. We'll call the meeting to order. What's your pleasure on the minutes you received?
I make a motion to approve and circulate it.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion, second. Any questions? All right, all in favor of accepting the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the minutes stand approved. Did we have any unfinished business?
Johnny, do you want to do it now? Or?
I guess it'd be good as time as any for that.
I guess I was talking to Johnny about the supplemental watershed agreement that we kind of had that last time, and Bob was looking at it. If we want to do that now,
be fine. If Bob's ready.
Oh, I am.
I said, if you're ready.
Well, I have to confess that I still haven't looked at it in detail. But, you know, y'all can go ahead. There's really not a lot of choice. I was just trying to figure out, as I recalled you, as you recall, I said what your obligations will be if you sign the agreement. My understanding is that the obligation by signing it is just to get you in line. But it does obligate you to do things like extend the agreement to maintain these things for 100 years, up from 50, and it'll do it from the day that it's reconstructed. Now, as long as you know that, you want to do it, that's fine. It's a short version.
The statement you made that concerns me is to get us in line. That's the
for the funding, from what I understand, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, if you have any questions.
I wanted to point out that I've got two fellows here, Steve Bernards and James Featherston. And so they're up for any questions that the board might have concerning this rehabilitation of Site 5. If you all have any questions.
Where's the money?
We, with the election and everything, we're not expecting to have a final budget until probably February or March of next spring. In the meantime, we'll be under continuing resolution. They'll give us a minimal amount of funds to keep projects going that are underway. Where we're at on this project is before it can receive any funding, we have to have an authorized plan. And that's the plan you have, the agreement and the plan that you have in front of you, the watershed supplement. And once all the sponsors sign it, NRCS State Conservationist signs it, then we send it to Washington, and the chief authorizes it for funding. And at that point, then, we can get funding for construction. So that's the stage we're at right now, is we're trying to get the plan authorized. Once it's authorized, that does move us, it'll move this project up in the priority ranking somewhat for funding. This project's going to have to compete nationwide with all the rehabilitation projects that have been requested for funding. And a lot of the ranking is based on the risk index, which is the number of people living downstream that would be in danger, as well as the potential for the dam to fail. But that's not the only factor. There's also some other factors, such as one of them being having an authorized plan in place, which means we're ready to design and construct. And so that'll move us up on the list.
We're in there with New Orleans and all that bunch. We're wasting time, guys.
You know, in the big picture, yeah, I guess we are. But in rehabilitation, of course, the NRCS is the only agency that has a rehabilitation program for dams. The last figure I heard was somewhere in the neighborhood of $20 million nationwide for the watershed rehab program. Yeah, that's what it was in 2008. And, you know, that doesn't go very far. But in previous years, it had been in the neighborhood of 30 to 35 million, and that usually covered everything that, that was requested. So we're probably going to be at the 20 million number, which means there's going to be some requested projects that don't get funded. We're hoping, doing what we can to get this one up as high in the ranking as we can, so that we might get some funding for it.
Let me ask one question. I don't recall the contingency in the updated agreement. So what happens if we sign the updated agreement and agree to sponsor for another 100 years and then the money doesn't come through?
Well, it's until the project is rehabilitated, the 100-year time period is not going to apply until that's done.
Okay, but we're not bound by all the other terms and conditions under the new updated agreement. If the funding doesn't come through, we just go to the old agreement. Is that correct?
Well, we might have to look at specific terms and conditions, but I think essentially this supplement is what it is to the watershed plan.
Right.
You're agreeing to rehabilitate this dam. I mean, there's no funding. Y'all have no... You're not obligating your funds at this point, and we're not either because we don't have any. But by signing the agreement, we all agree here that we're going to rehabilitate this dam and that this is the method we're going to use to rehabilitate it.
If that was all that it said, I don't think anybody here would have a problem with it. But occasionally, it's been my experience, and this is just my cynical view, that the new forms come out and they say a whole lot of other things other than you're going to rehabilitate it, and if it's not funded, it doesn't get it rehabilitated. None of the rest of this applies, and that's my question. Are there things in there that are unrelated to the rehabilitation that would be changed from the existing agreements?
I don't know of anything.
Okay. The other thing that Mike whispering in my ear back here, apparently this is the one in Texas that is this just one in Texas?
It's the only one on the table right now?
Yeah. Okay. It's the only new plan on the table right now. We've got some others that were previously authorized, and they're getting funding right now for construction, for design and construction, but this is the only new one.
Okay. And the other thing that I'll just observe is, and I don't know how this is going to work out, there's probably going to be legislation introduced in the upcoming session of the Texas legislature to deal with dam rehabilitation in Texas, particularly a lot of the old SCS structures. Nobody's proposed any funding for it now, and I think we're probably going to go into a funding crunch, but it came up in the legislature last session, and it's proposed again this session. It will be proposed, and nobody knows what that's going to look like. I assume it won't matter to the federal program, but I don't have any way of knowing.
Most likely it's not going to have any impact. It's what you have there is a potential that the state would pick up part of your share of funding somewhere down the road. But again, there's no guarantees on that. There's no guarantee that will bring the federal funds either. So.
Or the thing that I would worry about is that if it passes because there is state funding, all of a sudden, money that would have come to Texas will go to other states.
I don't think so, because the rehab program is a little different than the original watershed program, where the money, I'm not sure what basis it was allocated back before everything was earmarked, but there was some kind of process. But rehab has a very specific process in ranking the projects, and it's mostly related to, like I said, the risk index, and they compete nationwide. And so I don't see that something that happens with the state legislature is going to affect that process.
That's all.
Is this 100-year extension, is that just for that one site?
Yes.
Is there a statement in there stating to the fact that it's just not funded, and this is null and void, this statement we're talking about signing, this agreement?
No, I don't know if it says it or not.
There ought to be a time frame somewhere.
There ought to be a statement that
after
our protection or something.
It may be contingent upon the reconstruction actually being done and completed, and if that contingency is in there, it'd be okay. I just don't remember the specifics, and I didn't bring it with me, I'm sorry.
We don't have our funds obligated whole just for this one project. 10 years from now, still be holding the funds for it. You know, that's obligating money that we have.
Cost overrun, too. The
cost
going up every day on the estimated cost of doing these sites.
There's a time limit somewhere.
We're committed to, what, 35%?
Yes.
Which we were estimating to be about $700,000. Well, 35% of $5 million would be a lot different deal, so I'm not sure we want to be tied to that either.
Well, the the real obligation on your part comes when we sign a project agreement where we have, when we get the funding, we'll ask you to sign a project agreement with us where you obligate your 35% share and we'll obligate our 65% share. And that's a more binding contract because that obligates the money for both parties. And then from there we go to construction.
Well, I understood under the agreement we previously had that we could spend our money prior to them ever being funded. Is that not true?
Yes. I think so.
See, we don't want to spend $700,000 out here, then y'all not get any. We're supposed to spend a lot of money getting things ready prior to y'all even being funded.
Well, that's, and of course, we have an MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, that we both signed. Johnny, when was it, a year ago or something?
Something like
that. Be more interested in the IOU y'all signed up.
That has been signed, and we're already committed to doing those preliminary things. And my understanding is things like land acquisition costs are not included in that.
Well, that's right. Yeah.
So if we had to go out now and acquire new land, we'd be doing it our own effort.
But you're not obligated to do those things right now. But the only thing the MOU does is it allows you to get credit for those if you so choose to do some of those things. So that way you've got credit towards your 35%.
And if Johnny has worked on this project even last year, I think the MOU was signed in June of last year, then his time, we call that in-kind credit, it could be allotted toward that 35%.
Right.
Yeah, I know that, but if it's never funded, that's still expended funds that no recourse, no way to get it.
That's right.
I mean, we've done that before, getting easements on sites, spending money to build a site and then not get it funded or built, and we're stuck with the easement cost and all that stuff for these sites.
I'm going to argue the other side just briefly because this is one of those structures, if I'm not mistaken, is on the high hazard classification list, and the fact that it is on the high hazard classification list means that we're going to have to do something. Plum Creek's going to have to do something. It's either going to have to install emergency notification, emergency management type notice plan, or it's going to have to be rehabilitated, or both.
Yeah, but we're fixing to be 12 more sites to do the same thing.
Well, there are, I think.
Yeah.
I think they
now
are
we're going to spend $3 to $5 million on each site?
You could.
Is there any way we can buy a bulldozer and take them out?
Well, I just still haven't gone over the new rules and regulations, but the state has just adopted new Dam Safety Act rules and regulations that go into effect in January. And it talks about things including how you get rid of a dam that's in place. So the state's anticipating that some of these may go away, but I haven't analyze them.
But some of that area up there around us, around Kyle area, it may be safer if they went away with the runoff and stuff that they're getting now on all the asphalt and the backwater.
Unless these guys have done a comprehensive exam to look at what the what the change in hydraulic characteristics is looking like up there in the watershed plan. I don't know whether
that. Well, not in all of those. You know, we have on this one, of course, but we haven't looked at all the other dams.
Okay.
But, you know, the other thing you need to keep in mind, too, is the benefits of keeping the dam there. Besides the flood control, you've got the enhancement to land values, which is your tax base. So I don't know how much that amounts to, but it's something to think about, too.
Water quality perspective, too, has some benefit.
I think this dam is also part of the City of Kyle's stormwater management pollution prevention plan. So if the dam were to go away, the city would have to address that in some manner as far as retaining that runoff from new construction.
And that's been, in some other cities, a pretty important benefit of these dams. Role it plays in stormwater pollution prevention.
Have they talked to y'all or us about that?
I visited
about changing the use of those, that lake.
I personally visited with, I believe, the city engineer Kyle. He's the one that confirmed it was part of the SWP.
Well, then I think they better start looking at some cash parked over then. Yep.
We had discussed talking to them about operating agreements for some of these sites, and I suspect that. Do more of that.
Okay, any other questions? Or well, you want to think about the agreement? You want to look at it more, or we want to talk about it more? Or
I think we just need to go ahead and sign it. Because we're under the gun.
Is that a motion?
Yeah, that'll be a motion.
All right. Sure. Second?
Second.
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, all in favor, raise your right hand. All opposed? Okay, motion carries.
There's seven of them.
Just take a sample.
You'll be 85 years old when you see its construction fire.
I'll be gone.
Y'all
going
to be here and check on it 100 years? Hopefully we're doing a good job.
Y'all move on with any other, got any other unfinished business?
I believe that's all. I think so.
Okay, item four.
Yes, I asked Mr. Russell Park, the Vince Institute, to come tell us about their services and with regard to our monitoring wells that we approved. And he's got a few handouts, is that right, Russell?
I do, and then maybe just kind of to give you guys kind of an overview. And if you would like, I can stay to the end, and I've got my laptop, and then I can show you software and kind of how all of this stuff works. To give you a kind of a general brochure, I don't know that I have enough. I think I got maybe 8 or 10 of those. As Mr. Wilson said, my name is Russell Park. I'm with Insitu. Basically, Insitu makes what we call smart groundwater pressure transducers. So basically these devices are made out of titanium. It's got a titanium strain gauge and a temperature sensor here. Also built into here are lithium batteries that will power the unit, and then it's microprocessor. So basically you can look at this and say this is a computer. And we generally hook these up with field cables of various lengths, depending on what your depth of water is and your total depth of your well. But the idea, we'll put this in the well, in the water far enough that the drawdown will never get below it. Basically, we're measuring temperature and water pressure. It actually stores data in either depth or depth to water, which is the most common measurement. So we can set these up. You can go out and retrieve the data once a month or once every quarter or once a year. There's enough memory in here. If, say, you were taking readings every hour, you could store data for 5 years without retrieving the data. The internal batteries here are good for 5 years, taking readings every 15 minutes. We have proposed to attach this to a cell phone, which is what this little box is. So the field cable connects to it. Inside of here is a cellular phone. It works actually on the AT&T network. The service for the cell phone is about $20 per month per site. And then we provide a piece of software that allows somebody to go in and actually retrieve the data every so often. You can also look at current readings at the site. So the idea with this system with the cell phone would be that you could put these transducers out, have somebody maybe once a month go in and retrieve the data. The software allows you to create a nice little pretty graph or export the data to Excel, or it could be put into a database. Cost for this system, we've kind of put together a budgetary price for four sites, assuming two sites with 200-foot cables and two sites with 300-foot cables. And the cost, as far as the equipment cost, is going to be approximately $15,000. And then the annual phone service is $20 per site, which works out to, for four sites, about $960 per year. So once these transducers were in place, then the annual, the phone service would really basically be your only annual recurring cost. We've sold these systems to a lot of the groundwater districts here locally. Barton Springs Edwards Aquifer is probably one of our biggest users. They have one of these identical systems on their Love Lady well, which is their drought trigger well. We've got several units at Edwards Aquifer Authority, Middle Trinity, Headwaters, Hayes Trinity, and then there's a few others out west, Hickory. So we have, you know, a pretty big install base of these systems. I'm here local. I'm in the south side of Austin, so I'm here to provide local support. Basically, the system that we provide comes with everything, the box. It even comes with the U-bolts to mount it to a pole. The only thing that would need to be done at the site would be actually to install a 2-inch steel pipe.
Headwaters is one of my clients also, and we do use their services, and ours are all attached to satellites, because cell phones don't work in hell kind of situation.
Do we have wells ready to go now?
We have one well in Lockhart.
Two wells.
And what we want to do is try to find some neighbors or private owners that will allow us to use wells, or either drill or use one of their own wells. And there's another option is that some places in the county, there are wide spots in the road, which we could drill in the road, set up something like that. And we've done that with Headwaters. What we do is if we're on the road, we actually fence it with a chain link with razor wire around it. And if it's an owner, that would allow us to do that on their land. The owners are concerned about us coming on their land a lot of times. So we would just tell them, we'll never be there. So set this up. That's about it. And we'll never be coming around. It'll be fenced off. So that's what we've done in other districts. One district, you mentioned Headwaters.
So you got to get to it for maintenance occasionally, I guess.
Occasionally.
You probably will. I mean, once you start looking at the data and you get a history on the well, you'll know. You'll be able to see the changes in depth of water, and you'll have a pretty good idea. We do recommend that occasionally, once a quarter, maybe once a year, that you want to go to the site and just do a tank down and verify that the water level it's measuring is, or reporting is, accurate. But general rule, these transducers are very, very stable, and there's not really any maintenance that you require.
I use this transducer myself for water availability studies, and it's a very reliable transducer, and it has connections that twist like this. They used to be screwed in, and those weren't too good, but these new twist ones are very, very secure. And my experience has been very good with these, and I've used them since it's 97, I guess. So what we're asking for, I guess, today is you go ahead and commit to at least two of these transducers, and then try to find some owners, make a plan. If we can, me and Johnny, Josh, try to go find
an owner that would allow us to actually drill a well in that place and set one of these up.
So the way I understand it, these are $15,000 apiece, each well?
No. There's four of them together.
Okay, how about the 920? That's for one well then?
No, that's
are all the service on the same number?
No, it's $20 per month
per
well.
Okay.
So
I mean,
roughly $240 a year per
We've
well.
Already got, this is an identical box to what we've got on our weather stations. And I mean, we never had any problem with the reporting of the box itself, I don't think. But we already have an account with AT&T with three or four lines on it, or how many? There's three, I think. Three.
Yeah.
And the service in situ will let you will supply the service. It's $20 a month. They're basically getting it from AT&T. It's what's called a static IP address. So it's a little different than the phone service that you go get from a local AT&T network. Once you get these set up, you know, you're free to contract with AT&T directly, and you might save a few nickels, maybe $5 a month, going directly through AT&T because you're, I'm not even certain what category you guys can fall into. But
the other thing we talked about at one time, too, is if these were, and we have some that are close enough to our locations, would be to use a radio frequency to send the signal back to where we already have a cellular site set up and then send it from there. But
where you've got your weather station, so you have some sort of data logger there?
We have data loggers.
Is it like a Campbell Scientific or, you know?
But it's Fondre East Environmental, so you'd install it.
Okay, I'm familiar with them.
Okay.
Yeah, that might be possible, actually, to bring this in. You could take the pressure transducer here and go straight into this system. I'm not certain, depending on the age of your system.
Year old.
I think he would do directly into it. He'd read it, what we call SDI-12, and it would actually come in under his software and that sort of scenario. So I don't know, by the time you radio telemetry, though, depending on how far we had to go, if it was short range.
Yeah, most of them wouldn't be more than probably a mile and a half, 2 miles.
A mile and a half. Maybe able to do it with some type of spread spectrum or what we call Zigbee radio. We'd have to look at that. You might end up spending as much on the radios to do that as you would just to go ahead and do another cell phone.
So what are we spending now with AT&T?
It's similar to that. I don't know. Is it more than that, or Karen, you pay the bill? I don't know.
It's about $250 or something like that. I'd have to look to be sure.
Yeah, I'm off.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have three of them now, so I guess we're spending more than that. I didn't think it was that much. I thought we were spending.
Yeah, this will probably be. I'm not exactly certain how Fondre's is, whether he's doing data or you have to get a phone number.
Number, but it's a data account. But it's an unlimited data account, is what it is. And
okay.
You know.
Yeah, and what we generally supply is a 1 megabyte plan, which is plenty. For this sort of thing. So, I mean, you're only doing level and temperature even if you did it every 15 minutes, you still wouldn't come up to 1 megabyte. When you're doing your met station stuff, then you've got several parameters and you're probably doing it more frequency. So that's the reason why our cost would be somewhat less. The other thing I'll point out, too, is that this modem has the capability to set in an alarm. So you can say if my depth of water gets above a certain point, or I guess depth of water, yeah, or if my water level drops below a certain point, we can send a email or a text message to a phone or to an email an account, just an alert saying, hey, this water level has dropped too low. So we're starting to use these quite a bit on production wells where we're worried about maybe burning up the pump if the water level gets too low. So that's part of the system, too. I don't know how applicable it would be for what you guys are doing, but it's something that's there.
Well, we have two wells, I guess, ready to go. Y'all are ready to go.
Well, on the pricing of the equipment, if we just bought two wells today, would it just be half as much, or how would that work?
Yeah. Roughly, because there's a couple of things, like the software is a couple $100. It's a one-time thing.
What software are you guys using?
We use a software that In-Situ makes. It's called In-Situ Plus. It's $200 for a license. Basically allows you the IP connection.
Well, I have In-Situ 5.0 or 5 point something on it.
And it's really the same software with Plus. They add the ability to type in the IP address. It's really, you got to have Plus if you want to communicate over the internet to the device.
What's y'all thinking on the other two wells? How long do you think they might take?
And we hadn't looked real hard either. I mean, yeah, we haven't. We got permission on a couple, and then we were waiting a year.
It's kind of hard to get landowners to do this. My experience, at least in Hill Country, has been peddlers. We've had some trouble. But we now have a well that we have on satellite, and only one of them is on county property. All the rest are on private property. But it's taken a while to do it. It's about 4 years to get 12. And it's the only way we're going to be able to support our MAGs. By the way, one of the MAGs was approved. I mean, one of the DFCs was approved recently in the Hill Country. And the water management plan that we have to submit didn't include that approval. And if you have a DFC that's been approved, that has to be in your water management plan right now, September 1st, 2010. And the only way that they would allow us to do that is we had a monitor well with one of his units in it in this particular DFC that the Texas Water Development Board approved. So it's not something that is just academic. It's going to be a real problem after September 1st, 2010.
Personally, I think I'll probably go ahead and commit for four of them and be done with it. And when they do come online, we're ready to install them. So
the only thing that might vary, I mean, not knowing what those last two wells would be your cable length. So you may want to consider, if you've got two that are ready now, and you want to go ahead and go with four, you may want to consider holding off buying the cables for the other two until you know what those depths are. Or
that cable is not cheap.
No.
No, and it's an integral part of the system. So, I mean, we can extend cables. But the cable extender costs you some money, so you want those cables to be, and we'll build them any length. And generally, you don't want to have a bunch of cable laying around up top. I mean, ideally, we have just enough to kind of come up and connect to the unit. So
well, this 15 doesn't take into consideration the cable?
It does. What I said, for budgetary prices, we figured right now two wells that are with 200-foot cables and two wells with 300-foot cables.
We don't have our water levels in this county on average are 37 feet.
Oh, so we're...
So, you know, 200 or 300 feet of cable is going to be...
It's going to be play. Yeah.
Or any well, I don't imagine.
I agree, we need to go ahead and do this.
Motion?
I'll make the motion.
Okay. We have a motion that we go ahead and approve the $15,000 plus the phone service. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? I don't want to favor the motion. Say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
You got one opposition. Okay, motion carries. Item five, who's handling that?
You want that, Sidra, or I can mention it, I guess, that the Caldwell Travis Soil and Water Conservation District each year asks for a donation. And I think last year we gave $2,500 and they needed some more, so we made it extra $500 and we give $3,000 last year. And this year they're asking for $4,000, and I guess because of inflation, like we talked about. And then also put a letter that Kendra sent last year. And they have that. So they're asking for $4,000 donation this year. Did you want to add anything to that, any of y'all, or for? Do you have any questions on that, Mr. Holt? Is what they? I think it helps to pay. I think. Part-time, I guess that's Ruby's salary.
I guess this tells us, you know, if y'all have any questions, what they use it with. But they get matching funds. Somebody matches the $4,000 we give. If we gave that amount, someone else would give $4,000 too. Used to the banks, and a lot of people gave, but they don't give anymore, do they?
They still get some. Yeah.
Some?
Yeah, they still get some. County and Banks, Travis County. It's a multi, double, dual county.
I guess y'all have a letter in your file.
We do.
Question.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I'd make a motion that we do the $3,000 level and, you know, like we did last year, and see what happens. And I guess this is like a reimbursement type of a...
Second.
I don't know how we handle that. How do we handle that, Bob, remember?
It's been some special language.
I looked it up a couple of years ago, and there's specific authority for these kinds of contributions to the Soil and Water Conservation Service from a water control and improvement district. So you're not skating on any legal thin ice. There's specific authority.
Well, we have a motion second that we give $3,000. Any other discussion? All right, all in favor of the motion, raise your right hand. All opposed? Okay, motion carries. We can vote on the other $1,000 later.
We'll see what happens.
They'll be back.
I'm just curious what you have in the budget for that this year, John.
I came here, I'm thinking about $3,000, Bob. Probably about the same, I would imagine.
So if you went over that, you'd have to do a budget amendment anyway.
Yeah, but I'd have to look and see what it is put there.
Okay. Item six. This is a long one.
Yeah, it is.
Going to handle it.
Did you want to mention that, Bob, on number six here, where we want to discuss about the
legislation
bill to the legislature?
I can. I wrote the agenda item. The question came up of participation of Plum Creek in the upcoming legislative session. There have been some discussions about what kind of legislation might be introduced, and in my thoughts, there are two different things that could happen. One has to do with the groundwater district in the area and the other changes that are going on in groundwater districts, but also, it relates back to the surface structures and the fact that there's going to be some legislative efforts made in connection with the soil and water conservation structures, dams, and dam safety. And so, I had a request actually from Johnny to draft an agenda item for the board's discussion to determine whether or not or how or the board was going to actively participate or not in the upcoming legislative session, whether the board wanted to do something proactive and take the initiative, or again be reactive, or if you did want to do something proactive, how you wanted to go about doing it and what you wanted to do. And it's all available for discussion. It is just a discussion item, although there, if y'all chose to do something like there's no proposal, for example, to enter into a legislative services contract with anybody. But y'all could consider whether or not you wanted to do something like that. So it did come up. Johnny asked me to write the agenda item, so I put it on the agenda for discussion, and primarily to see what y'all were thinking about, where you wanted to go.
Well, actually, I had asked Johnny to put it on. I felt like we needed to, as a board, decide, you know, what we wanted to do, what we didn't want to do, but make a decision now. So, you know, were we going to actually make a proposal to include in the district all the portions of the county that are not in a, currently in a district, and maybe discuss, you know, how, you know, who knows what other kind of legislation may come up. And I felt 2 years ago, you know, we were really hamstrung because we had no input. We made no, you know, we just had to sit and listen to what was happening and if we were being told the truth, you know, or not. And I just wonder if, you know, we shouldn't somehow be a little bit more, you know, proactive rather than getting something done to us without, you know, having some stand on it. I don't know how the board feels about it, but I just thought we needed to talk about it because we know what it's like to, we know how unpleasant the last legislative session was.
For Lucy, for what purpose would we need to, in anybody's thinking, take over the rest of our tentatively take over the rest of the county when the people don't have any water base whatsoever under it?
Well, 4 years ago, we did have a bill that basically was to expand the boundaries of the district over the whole county. I don't think it even got out of committee. So this would just be continuing in the line of, and we thought last year we were going to have a bill that would expand the district, but then, all the politics.
Let me talk about that for a minute, if you don't mind, because I can. Plum Creek is a WCNID. Yeah, okay, so that means you have powers to operate to help people solve water supply issues. We tend to think, because of the way this has come up in the last two sessions, we're thinking of Plum Creek primarily from its groundwater perspective. But in reality, the need is much more than the groundwater perspective. There is a need, particularly along the west side of the county, for protection. There are three entities that get their water supply from wells that are on the west side of the county that are not in anybody's groundwater district. They're along the San Marcos River. Tri-Community at least has a surface water rights permit to help it get its water flow from the underflow of the San Marcos River, but they get it by wells. Martindale has wells, the Martindale Water Supply Corporation does, and Staples, which operates in Guadalupe County, also has wells that are in Caldwell County, and they take the water across the river. So those people have just started a program called the Source Water Protection Plan in connection with TCEQ to look at how their water quality is being protected. One of the things that Plum Creek could do if it chose to do is to get involved in that program. Right now it's outside your boundaries. One of the big developments that is projected with State Highway 130 we're now looking at 5,000 to 8,000 LUEs, living unit equivalents, at the intersection of State Highway 80 and 130. And we don't know what the density is going to be yet, but again, it's one-third in Tri-Community and two-thirds in Maxwell Water Supply Corporation. Where the water is going to come from to supply that is a problem. Everybody is looking. There are ideas. There's a lot of competition. But again, it's something that if Plum Creek chose to do, it could actively become involved in. So, James, my answer to the question and my attitude is that just because there may not be any groundwater there doesn't mean there's not a role, particularly for a local WCNID, to actively get involved and help solve some of the water supply and distribution problems that are coming down the road. There are some groundwater problems over there that are independent of the Carrizo-Wilcox, and which is a separate issue in my mind from moving water around and helping distribute it within the county. If Plum Creek chose to do that, it could do that through either revenue bonds or a combination tax and revenue bonds, because you have taxing authority so long as your tax cap is not exceeded. But it would take, if you were using tax revenue to help do that, it would take an election. And so, long-winded answer from my part, but there are reasons to consider whether or not it would be worthwhile, particularly with the expansion of State Highway 130, to increase the area boundary to solve some other problems in Caldwell County. I'll shut up there.
Well, to me, it looks like sometimes the further we reach out to do something, the more in trouble we get. I don't know why we need to go looking for any more trouble and make more citizens hostile and everything, especially with the way the economy is now, they want to buy a house over there with no water protection, that's their fault, you know. I mean, we're getting back into the Henry Cisneros deal of basically loaning money to people, whatever. If that's where they want to be, well, they got to suffer the consequences. Why should we protect them? And I've heard this thought come from different directions, too. You know, I'm wondering who's basically behind some of this stuff of, well, like Judge Wright had made one statement that he would like to see it in his legacy. Well, he'll be gone. We still got the problem, the way I see it. You know, we need to take care of what we got before we even think about going out looking for more problems. That's my feeling.
Okay, any other opinions or? What do you think would be the thing to do under this circumstance would be to write our own bill or what?
The first thing to do is to decide collectively what you think the role is going to be, your role as Plum Creek Conservation District is going to be evolving into. And there's a huge spectrum of possibilities associated with that. And I didn't, when I heard about this agenda item, I didn't think you'd resolve it today, unless somebody had something specific in mind. But even if you don't have legislation, there is going to be, even if Plum Creek doesn't want to initiate any legislation, there may be other legislation that gets filed that could affect what Plum Creek Conservation District is choosing to do. And it's not too early to begin considering how you want to react when that comes up. Historically, what's happened is that I've monitored the bills, and if I see something, I'll call it to Johnny's attention or to the attention of somebody on the board and let y'all then give me direction on what should be done. I will tell you that the bill filing period for the next legislative session will open probably before your next board meeting, because it opens within a few days or a couple of weeks after the general election on November the 4th. So we'll begin to get an idea of what people's thinking are before the next board meeting even.
I think what we need to decide and what we're going to actually be faced with is whether we want to be on offense or defense.
Well, we've already got a target. I've seen Patrick Groves at the last two Saturdays in a row, and I didn't read it myself, but a good source told me that he did publish in the paper that one of his top agenda items was to make this an elected board. And that's got to be something you guys decide, whether you want to just leave it alone or whether you want to deal with it or not, you know. I don't know. I think it's a day late and a dollar short on that one. I think anybody that was real concerned about it being an elected board is now in Dallas County. Most of the attention that brought came from the eastern part of the county. I don't think there was anybody locally that was pushing that item. So, it's on a different topic. But that was published in the paper, apparently.
Structure of Plum Creek may be something that comes up. Another thing that comes up is that could come up is how the DFCs are going to work and how the GMA process is going to work. That's going to affect how we permit things. There are a few things that Plum Creek could choose to do if it sought to do that. One of them, of course, is clarification on director's pay. We're operating under the old statute. Even though you're exercising the pay, I say pay, you're operating with the powers of a groundwater district, and if you're a director of a groundwater district, it gets three times the per diem, up to three times per diem that any of you do. And so that's something that could be clarified. There are a few other little things that could be done. I don't know that there's any pressure to clarify any of the boundary issues because we've been cooperating with everybody with whom we might have conflict. But there are these little areas that are with slivers of land in the northeast part of the county and on the west part of the county, Caldwell County now.
that are not in anybody's groundwater district, and if there is another proposal, as people have suggested, to create a super groundwater district so that every part of the state that's not presently in one is in a district, that would be an interesting development to see how it would happen. And the question, obviously, locally is whether people would rather be in a super statewide district of all these little bits and pieces of property, or whether they'd rather be attached to something close by. There are any number of little things like that that could come up, and I think Lucy, if I can, she just wanted it on the agenda to have to initiate the conversation and follow the board.
I think you want to be on a proactive stance this time, so we wanted to be as reactive as we were last time.
I don't think it's going to make much difference if Patrick Rose wanted to run with the other. I don't think he'll pay any attention to what we have to say, even if we get to be aggressive in our approach. I just think he's sold enough on himself that he's just going to do his thing. And best thing to do is beat him, which won't happen, but it's the best thing to do is beat him.
Well, the real question for the board really is to decide how it wants to evolve in the future, what it wants to do, and whether you want to influence that legislatively or not, or how bills that might be introduced could impact what the board sees itself evolving into is really the discussion I think that should be going on. That's my from my perspective.
And for Bob and whoever else is there to have some, as these things happen, to know. Without, and we only meet once a month, and it doesn't take many months to have things happen quickly there and call special meetings or whatever.
Well, you know, if Patrick is going to introduce a bill like you're talking about, then, you know, we're immediately put in a defensive, you know, position.
Yeah.
And
I think it's weird that of his agenda items, if that's one of his top ones that he wants done. But
yeah. I don't know if that for this board's concern, if that portion of it's even worth the aggressiveness or not. You know, it's going to be, eventually it's going to be elected. I mean, just keep
right.
putting it up.
And, oh, it will be.
Yeah.
And, but, you know.
And to me, it makes me no difference outside of that. It will change the tax rates and everything else once that board comes elected, because it be a different type of folks running for these directors.
Mm-hmm. You know, but.
Things
you know.
We do care about. Sorry to interrupt, but you know, whether there's a temporary board in the interim or whether everybody's just all of a sudden right in the middle of this gets booted out and then another time somebody else comes in.
Yeah.
I mean, I think those are parts of that though that do make sense to, even if you don't fight the issue of an elected board or not, that there's some respect to the way that it
right.
goes about.
I mean, I think we have an obligation to make sure that, you know, no matter what happens, that things happen in an orderly manner. You know, if there is a bill introduced that has to do with an elected board, you know, something can be tacked on it that expands the district.
Right, there'd be more to it than just that.
Oh, sure, yeah. But I just hate to think that we'll be in such a defensive position again, you know, and maybe just the fact that we're talking about it will make it a little bit better, but
maybe it's the opportunity too to call Patrick and go sit down and tell him what we've read and what we've heard
and
you know, we'll see if we can get some honest answers as to what to expect before we get to the position of.
Well, I think that's good, because here we're assuming that that's what he's going to do, and you know, it just could have been an off the wall kind of comment he made to somebody. So you know, maybe we do need to do a little investigation, find out what he's got, you know, if he would share it with anybody.
It's always good to communicate with your elected representative.
Yeah.
And he said both times that I've seen him, he said to come visit with him and let him know if we have anything we need or want to do. And whether that, and of course, he's running for re-election, so.
Mm-hmm. No. So right now he wants to help.
Yeah. Maybe a good opportunity between now and November to get some help, so.
Well, you know, I mean, but I think we should, you know, go see him.
We ought to have be on the same plane, though. Mm-hmm. Let's see, what's to work out.
And then once you see him, what do you want to ask him? What do you want to tell him? I mean, Bob, those are the more important questions. I think that Bob would probably like to know how that is. You know,
first thing I'd want to ask him, if we came up with a bill, would he look at it? If we wrote a bill of our own for this area, you know, for...
That's a fair question to ask.
Would he take our ideas and look at them and...
Are we wasting our time before we spend a bunch of money?
Well, who wants to meet with him? I think a good idea to meet with him.
I'll be glad to do that if somebody else wants to go.
I'll be happy to attend, but that's up to you guys whether you want to pay two people to go or not. So.
From my perspective, it might be important to have a board member there.
Well, I'll go whenever, if it works out in my schedule.
And it really should be, we should also meet with Senator Hager once we start to. Now, that may be a bit of an easier meeting. I don't think he's got an agenda for Plum Creek Conservation District yet.
Well, why don't y'all take care of that? Is that what the board wants to do, is start some communication?
Yeah,
with?
So. Yeah, that'll work. Yeah.
And what, y'all try to get to see both of them? And if we have to have a call meeting or something, just holler and we can do that too.
Okay.
If there's something turns up that we think we need to get back together.
Sounds good.
Okay?
Thank you.
Item 7, I'm going to put down the line a little bit. Item 8. Feather?
Yes, sir.
You have something for us?
Several things.
All right.
The first item is to talk about is the new blown well.
That's the Seagull.
Which I just received the well this morning.
Did she need the secretary?
Last evening, but I didn't look at the
secretary. Need to sign things.
If you look at this map,
design.
You'll see a little triangle. That triangle is where this well was drilled. This well was started, if you can look at the map, you'll see that it's within the outcrop area of the Wilcox. And you'll see the contours, the little 700-foot contour. This well was drilled deeper than that. It was drilled to 900 feet. But the base of the Wilcox was at 730 feet right here. And this is all Wilcox from here up to the surface. And these sands and the levee deposits that are intermediate between the sands are all formed in a deltaic continental area. In other words, these were levee deposits and marsh deposits where you don't see this high resistivity. And these were big channels going through this big delta system. Channel here, 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 here. As you get down into the lower sections, you're beginning to get into some areas that are estuaries, not just deltas, big delta continental systems. And right at this base of the Wilcox, there was a green sand described. A green sand indicates glauconite. Glauconite is fossil fecal pellets from fish. And it's a phosphate deposit. So from this point forward, though, down is the Midway. The Midway is all marine and shelter. So it looks like this is going to be a very good well. This is going to be their observation. They're going to screen with PVC this section, are you going to screen this section? These two big channel sands and this channel sand. And test, either test with a pump or I suggested to him that they could hire the same company that can take discrete water samples from these channels here, to get an idea of the quality of the water. It looks like this well, the one that they're going to produce, not this one. This is their observation well. So that's as much as I know about it now. Probably have to revise my map slightly, but it didn't come out too bad as far as the contours are concerned, based upon other well wells in the area. The other thing I want to report on is the GMA 13 numbers. I have the actual runs right here in this book, which is mine. The office has a copy of this also. It's quite extensive, but I gave you a little summary of what these runs are telling us. Recall we used low, medium, and high. Well, in the Gonzales portion of the runs, they use Gonzales County's numbers rather than the numbers we submitted. So it changed the drawdown slightly. And look at this table right here. These are the tables for each individual aquifer on the low, medium, and high runs as to how much drawdown we were going to see under these pumpage scenarios. For example, the Carrizo, the Upper Wilcox, Middle Wilcox, and Lower Wilcox, all of those are in probable account.
That includes the eastern portion of those?
Yes, it includes it. That includes both this area, and Gonzales County. But they use the Gonzales County numbers so that there wouldn't be an overlap between what we submitted and what Gonzales County submitted. You can see that the highest lower Wilcox drawdown would be 105.4 feet. The medium 68.1. Low scenario would be 34. So total, these are the total drawdowns that they would expect from these runs. Now, if you want to study these runs, you can. Johnny has a copy of them, don't you?
Yeah.
And then I've also included actually maps of some of the saline drawdowns. Go through here. See, here's a map of water level after 60 years, pumpage of the Carrizo. This area. And it shows about 100 feet of, well, 20 to 30 feet. And this is, I don't know if this is a high or one of these is a low. But each one of these maps is self-explanatory and how much drawdown is going to be. If you look at figure 12, after 60 years, the middle well cost shows that we could have 150 feet of drawdown in this area, in the southeast corner of the county. Which is not unreasonable. I mean, if you look at the proposal we had, we could have much more than this. We could have as much as 250 to 300 feet of drawdown. I'm not suggesting that you make any decisions on any of this, because we don't know what's going to happen in the next legislative session. I'm just giving you this synopsis.
Or who you'll be talking to next.
Or, yeah, that's right. It's not something that I wrote a little memo to you that there was an original deadline in November, but that's out the window now. That was for reaching out. We don't have to do that. Nobody wants to. You can either choose no drawdown, or you can choose 50 feet or 100 feet. I may have what you want to do. I wouldn't make any decision right now. Just remember, though, that
the
basic results of the mags are going to be hard to change, I think, once it's in 2010. So I would suggest that you think about a conservative approach. And I think you should give consideration to the increase in population that we expect in the county. Another very, very critical, really critical decision is, do you want to mine water here or do you not mine? You don't want to mine water, because if you see drawdown like this, permanent drawdown, so that means you're going to be mining water. See, if you choose a 50 foot drawdown or 100 foot drawdown, you're mining water because it's going to see where you go. Do you want to do that? That's a fundamental question. Do the constituents the county want.
Is on these maps, are you changing the location of pumpage in these? There's a set of three for medium, low, and high. Is that how they change, or?
No, I just included just a few maps in there as examples.
Okay. No, I just noticed in like the medium, it changes towards the end.
Yeah.
Not if you're moving pumpage around there.
No, really, it depends on. It also depends on what the pumpage was, what was submitted, and in our area. Because most of the water in the county, most of the groundwater, is in this area. So they use a higher number than we submitted because they use Gonzales County's numbers, not ours. And that's just, you know, the agreement was with Shirley Wade that we didn't want to double dip this area. We didn't want to use both our numbers and add them up. We just wanted to use one number. So they chose the Gonzales County. Even though we do have overlapping areas in part of the county, I just wanted to make sure you understood that. Is that right, Greg? Am I saying something right?
No, I think that that's correct.
And I talked to Shirley Wade about it when she was making the comments, what she was doing, and how she would handle it. So I guess the biggest thing that I would ask yourselves. Do you want to mine water or not? That's what I'm trying to say. And a lot of counties have to face this. Everybody's got to face it. Most of the counties in the GMA 13, not most of them, but quite a few of them, are irrigation counties. And they're counties where people want to sell water. Or half the people in the county want to sell water, and half the people don't. That's Gonzales County's position. About half the people down there want to sell water, and half the people don't. So, what about this county? Does this county want to do the same thing or not?
Who wants to sell it? The ones that have it?
Yes.
The ones that don't have it don't want to sell it?
Not necessarily, no. There's quite a few people in this area that don't want to sell water. And there's some that do. So,
I think
it's really a naughty problem.
Just personally thinking, I think when the price gets there, they're going to all want to sell it.
Perhaps so.
You see anybody that don't want to sell oil when it's... When the price gets there, I mean, it's...
No, sir. I mean, water is not a commodity now, but it should...
It will be, yeah.
And, you know, you go to the restaurant, you buy an iced tea, and it's $1.95, and the water's free. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
I think this board, whether they want to or not, will be mining water. I mean, it will be... When it gets to that point, you know, it's...
I think it's important that in the low estimate that we put, that was basically for no drawdown. I mean, that's what Feather and I used, is what we thought would be no drawdown, and it was still, 35 feet. And what that means is it's not as much as what we're doing here is what's happening around us. So, I mean, you could go with the low estimates, and you're still not going to be able to control what...
Well, the demand for the crews at Wilcox is much higher than the supply. We're seeing that right now across the board. And... So there, if that demand is met, definitely we're going to be mining water. There's no question about it. Or we're going to be transporting water from the Gulf.
But I don't think, us, Gonzales, I don't care who it is, I think we'll be mining water before it's over. I think that's true.
Y'all talked about a 100-foot drawdown, right?
Yeah.
We're
using that over.
We're hoping people plant again. But see, this process, it involves y'all too.
Right.
Y'all are part of it. If y'all say zero, we say 100, that's not going to work with this model,
right?
Because we're next door to each other, and we're both the same Wilcox and Greenville. So we have to, that's why we want to know what y'all want to put down. We need to know what Guadalupe County has, because they're right against our district also. So we're not in a vacuum anymore. You're not in your own district. You've got to decide with your neighbor what type of drawdown, if any, that you want. That's why we need to talk with y'all.
Right. Well, that one was at the meeting a couple of weeks ago. We were talking maximum 100-foot drawdown.
And that's maximum anywhere in the county, or is there a location put to that?
We're 100 in Wilcox and Carrizo and Artesian, 50 in the outcrop, and then 50 in the Sparta. And those are awkward. Of course, that may or may not hold depending on what everybody else wants to do. We may have to go a little more, we may have to go a little less.
Dan went to a GMA meeting and reported that SAWS wanted 400 feet of drumming. That's what they wanted us to consider.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, their basic proposal for the DFC, well-filled water level declines in the confined portion of the Wilcox aquifer should not exceed 400 feet below the 2008 levels by 2060. So 400 feet.
So SAWS is looking for a lot of water. A number of other people are too. I suggest you don't do anything but just start thinking about it, because I don't have any idea what might happen this next legislative session. We have met, by the way, several districts in Hill Country where I work a lot. We actually met with all of our representatives and told them what we thought they should do. Now, will they do anything is the question. But we met with them concerning the GMA process, and there's a lot of objection to the process in the fact that we don't think we should be testing against the models because the models are not working, that we should come up with our own DFC on a county-by-county basis, and our mags will be on a county-by-county basis, depending on whether the county wanted to irrigate or whether the county wanted to just domestic supply or using conjunctive use like you are here. We have no idea what those representatives would do. We talked to those senators, and we even talked to candidates. About five districts in GMA now did this. And we talked to them in a technical sense, and told them why we thought the way we did. Fortunately, we all pretty well agreed what we wanted to do. And so I think it's a good idea to talk to the representatives. Another thing that's going to happen is this area right here, and this area right here will be thrown into a district, somebody's district. It could be thrown into yours, it could be thrown into this district, it could be thrown into another one. So this county will be represented by the time the mags arrive, 2010, September 1st. So somebody is going to take these areas. And the state will just say, that area is going to Lost Pines, or that area is going to PCCD. They will just arbitrarily tell you this. Now, some counties that are partially represented, like Comal, for example, has no district. They want to be thrown into Bear County. That's not necessarily what's going to happen. And by the way, these people have no say in what you do in this GMA process. None whatsoever. The county commissioners really have no say. It's you. It's your district. You do. You actually make the decision. I don't think the county commissioners and all the people that are associated with all this understand it, do you, Bob? They don't understand that once you set these mags and you control these mags, you control growth, period. You control real estate business in this county. And so that's something else. This is a very, very serious situation as far as growth is concerned. Growth versus sustainability. Now, if you come up with a MAG or a DFC that doesn't make any technical sense, like 400 feet of drawdown, takes the water development board and turn it down. So, anyway, that's kind of my summation of what I want to tell you about. And if you want to, I would suggest you get a hold of a copy of Ms. Johnny and read these. Read some of the in these three rooms. These are just choices. These are not set in stone. You can do a lot more or a lot less or say whatever you want. And certainly cooperate with Greg over here. Decide what's best for the whole area.
Do you think that regardless of what we come up with at GMA 13 is going to be challenged?
Right. 400 feet could be challenging, yes. Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
SAWS may choose to challenge the 100 foot because it doesn't give them the project that they need.
Yeah, they may just say, well, if you're not going to give us that, forget it.
Yeah, that's my concern, is that every water supplier is involved in any project that's interested in doing a project has sent letters requesting, you know, DFCs, and I don't see how you make. I see them getting challenged by several different angles, regardless of what we come up with.
Well, I mean, the consensus is that most of the groundwater managers that I talk to, this whole thing's just going to erupt in legal chaos by 2010.
Look at Bob Grin.
I have a question for you about it. Just your opinion. There's various ways you can set the pits. You can do it by the aquifer, pumping, drawdown, by county. Right. It can get very confusing.
It can make very confusing.
In our GMA 13, should it be elaborate? Should it be just one basic number?
No.
What would be your
opinion? No, it should not be one basic number, because I think each district has their own constituency, their own people who want to either sell or not sell. We're kind of a domestic county. We're not a... This is not an irrigation county in any degree. Each county is pulling in, you know, five different directions. I think each county should set their own DFCs, and you can.
Let me ask a technical follow-up question. This is in here. Doesn't it just depend, though, on the transmissivity of the formation? Because if
sure.
we set, if Gonzales sets 400 feet, not that they will, and we set 50 feet, we don't have any water to permit to anybody.
It doesn't matter.
It's impossible.
Well, we have about 12,000 acre feet now permitted approximately. Is that correct, yeah. Johnny? Is that right?
Yeah, something like 10,900. You said
about 20,900.
Yeah.
And about 23,000 acre feet is sustainable right now, I think.
That it includes salts. I mean, that it include aqua.
So
thank you.
So then we still have a demand for population coming into the county in the future. Pretty quick, actually.
Well, what figure have you come up with for a drawdown? I mean, have you got something in this district?
Well, I'm in favor of sustainability. I'm a sustainability person. I don't think that society doesn't sustain their natural resources, that particular portion of that society will collapse eventually. And to me, sustainability is paramount for the whole natural resource view that we have for the entire United States, not just Caldwell County. But not too many people agree with that. If you've looked at other societies on a historic basis, they cut down all their trees, and, like in Easter Island, or the island where they have the big statues now. Well, when they cut down all their trees, they didn't have anything to burn, all the people had to leave. Now, same thing can happen to our society here, except for the fact that water, we have a lot of water, it's a water plant. We could put a 108-inch line, like Bob suggests, all the way from Port Aransas and import water. And we may have already exported our water, but we then may have to import it from somewhere else. Well, I think we're probably going to come to that. I think we're going to import
it. Well, I think the state will finally take this thing, they'll crisscross this country with big water lines, and wherever there's water, they'll take it where it's not.
I mean, the demand right now in the Hill Country, the Carrizo Wilcox, South Texas, Austin, San Antonio, Laredo area, demand exceeds supply now. And that means it's got to come from somewhere. That means we're going to be mining the whole thing until we get some other source of water. Now, I would think that conservation, like, for example, if this county wanted to pass a conservation system to where they're going to put in new subdivisions, and every subdivision has to have rainwater harvesting, every one from now on, and you get a tax break doing it. I think that's a good conservation measure right now to be done. But in some counties, they've had that, they've rejected it, they've actually done away with it. Kerr County is one of them. It's just people just think you can go over there and turn that tap on and it's going to flow forever, and it's not. I mean, that's why I maintain sustainability.
Well, what's rainwater going to do to ecology and all far as downstream and all that if everybody starts trapping it and
help? Right. You take a 1,500 square foot roof, that's about as big as this area right here, and you can water 3 acres plus all of your household needs for a year if you have 30 inches of rainfall a year with rainwater harvesting and no well.
If that house wasn't there, it would probably be absorbed by, a lot of that would be absorbed by plants and grass. And
even trees. With the bin there, it's going to run off somewhere.
Yeah, you're including runoff, yeah. Yeah.
If it's captured, it's not going to be runoff of that area at all. I mean, it's not going to be anything.
Well, yeah, I mean, you water your lawn, it's going to go into the grass, it's going to go into the trees, it's going to go into the groundwater.
And how many places have 30 inches of rain a year, too? That's
a lot right in this area. We're over 30 inches right here. Most of the hill country is over 30 inches. I mean,
big shape. Where's my 30 this year?
Let's get back to climatology. Okay, Edwards Aquifer Authority just did a study by NM and said that we're going to actually have a possible decrease in rainfall over the next 100 years by 40%, which is kind of scary. That's just going to make everything worse because that depends on how much rainfall. We have a decrease. It's 2 inches or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6. 40% is at the outside. That's something that I brought up to the Texas Water Development Board in the last meeting we had with them, the GMA. I said, have you considered that? No, I haven't considered climate change. But we have to plan for 50 years into the future by law. So Texas Water Development Board is conducting a study right now for 30% reduction in rainfall. 2060, right at the moment. Robert Mays told me this about 3 days ago. So climate change is just another thing to add it on to this sustainability problem. But, you know, I'm just a job. I don't make policy. Unfortunately, you know, fortunately, I don't make policy because that's the most difficult thing in the world for anybody to do. And that's, I have my own personal opinion about it, but that's about it. Any other questions? Thank
you. Okay. Cathedral?
Well, Johnny had mentioned something about two landowners that were upstream of Site 5 that had some concerns. Johnny, did they come?
No, they didn't.
Oh, okay.
They sure didn't. They were supposed to be here. The one did, Mr. Frankie did come. He may be visiting with the engineers now. I don't know. But he did. He was here when the meeting started. Don Frankie, Alfred's brother. But Mr. Green and his family didn't. No, they're not here.
Were they going to present some kind of a?
Well, they were mainly going to, I think, talk to the engineers, but to get some ideas before they brought a plan to the board here. But I guess he's going to go ahead and carry on with his plan like he's doing, and probably present to the board.
Mr. Green.
They're concerned about that runoff from those places up there. I don't know what authority we would have even on anything. I mean, we only have authority over the easement area that we have. And
that kind of goes for us also. You know, I talked to the engineer, and he said, well, as far as trying to define a line, an actual elevation line.
City of Kyle is actually the one they need to be fighting with, you know, who's putting those businesses and all in up there. And
okay, you're talking in the case of Mr. Frankie, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think he wanted an establishment of the easement line or elevation. And in that case, the way we would handle it through NRCS would be he would have to get his own certified surveyor to do that and find that location or elevation.
And Green wanted what was that?
Mr. Green was the one who wanted to build this berm around his property to keep our water
up
from coming
on that same site.
Right. But then you have, you know, the water coming down a hill could possibly go into his deal and be like living in a pool, as the engineers explained. So, and kind of what both of them are going to be here today, it's kind of like what. If the board would grant what Mr. Green requested, that's going to be just really compounding the problem of what Mr. Frankie is scared of.
Mr. Green actually built down in the easement, right?
Right. When Mr. Green bought his property X number of years ago, he was in our easement, but he was not in the floodplain. And when Mr. Bell showed him the map saying that this will be flooded in time, it's at that point he realized he's in the easement and he can't get out. He's in it now with three structures, and he's simply trying to prevent these structures from flooding. And the only way you can really do it now is to build this berm somehow around it to keep our easement water from backing up into his houses. So
he'll actually be building a tank around his, won't he?
Basically.
Just about.
He's still going to flood. I mean, he'll get water.
So, and he's going to do some surveying. He's going to have engineers look at it, come up with a plan. And the way it's planned, probably from November, is what he and I had talked about. He'll bring a plan to y'all at that point, unless something changed. I really thought they would have been here today. But
do you think Mr. Frankie left?
I don't know. He probably did. Okay. I'll try to get him to stay. But
does that push water onto somebody else or no? Uh-huh. By doing that, would he be pushing water?
In reality, he would.
Yeah, he would. Sure would.
And Mr. Frankie's concern is the Seton complex with this wall that they're building, which is, far as I can tell, it's out of our easement. It's on their property, but they're building this wall. And their concern, Mr. Frankie, is when we build our dam 3.5 foot higher, even though the runaround's the same, our elevation stays the same, but the dam is higher now, he's concerned about that holding more water in a severe flood, and this dam is not going to let the water go that way, so his property is going to be flooded. And that's in very expensive property across from Seton Hospital.
Yeah, but what he's worried about is that's a floodplain creek bottom there that he's talking about, and yeah, he's going to get water in that thing.
Raising the height of the dam without changing the spillway elevation, though, you're not changing the capacity of it. You're just preventing an overtopping, right? Is that the science behind that? Or?
You tell Mr. Frankie that.
But he's not going to understand it, right? I guarantee he's not going to understand it.
And as long as that wall is outside of the easement, that really doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, that's
really what they ought to do, put a wall just like it on the other side of that creek. That's what he ought to do. And that's what has to be done if he develops his, is another wall put over there, and you'll have that creek contained within those two walls, and it's raised up 12 feet higher than...
And we had another landowner above there. They're concerned also about the drainage where that coal is being built. They feel that water that normally went to that creek is now changed and coming into this creek. So, but it's hard, you know.
Kyle will have to do like San Antonio has done around Almas Creek and all the completely concreted it in, bottom sides and everything, widened it where it would handle the water that comes through. And that's what Kyle's going to have to do at Plum Creek eventually through the city of Kyle. Out there, that Barton place out there,
yeah,
where Plum starts right there, they're talking about putting a road parallel to railroad track over to HEB and Coles and all that, but when they do, they've got to build a bridge across that creek. Well, that's going to have to all be eventually shaped, that creek bottom shaped and concreted in to keep it within its boundaries. But they're going to have to deal with that. It's going to be Kyle's deal, because...
But some of them feel, you know, that Plum Creek should be working with the city on all of this drainage and... on and on.
I can't make them understand. We don't have any authority in that particular point. We only have authority for maintenance within our easements.
So I've called floodplain administrators and I've given those numbers to those folks, and they never call, you know. So.
And you're just so available.
Yeah,
to
Johnny's
them.
Available. Go dump so, on him.
So,
and the Frankie boys,
they're not reasonable either.
You can't know.
They're not reasonable at all.
They fought the city Kyle over a sewer line coming through that same area down there for months. The Greens, I don't know. I don't know them.
Yeah. I take it, last I talked to them, they will probably still come up with a plan to bring to y'all for that, you know.
Yeah, just looking at it on a preliminary basis, you know, we talked about it, and the engineer said that since they weren't going to be taking any or bringing in any spoil dirt from outside of the easement, then really he could do it if he wanted to, but he discourages it. The engineer really discourages that, because if you get one to doing that and then you get another one to doing that, boy, you're really squeezing water. Where is that water going to go?
You don't want to change the flow of it. You sure get in trouble then. You put water on your neighbor where...
And I think in his plan, they're going to try to, through engineer, decide how much, how 1 inch or whatever of water over how many acres that's going to raise by putting that one berm in. So,
I know there's a place down on the coast just before we get into Port Lavaca, home and garage and barn and all, and that's a berm all the way around it. And he's got big pumps inside of that in case it does break, but it's, you can barely see the top of the barns and house over that berm. I mean, it's a big, he's down in that thing with these
pumps.
But he's got pumps in there to try to.
Hope it starts, huh?
I don't think that, if that 20-foot roll of water comes through there, I don't think it's going to stop it. Okay.
Well, we were hoping that, Johnny and I were hoping that they'd be here that way, you know, since the engineers were here, maybe they...
You said Don Frankie came.
He did come, yeah. And I introduced him to Mr. Featherston, but the meeting started at 2, so he said something about either coming back. He did give him a card, and so they were visiting when I left. So he has talked with the engineers.
Okay. All right, what else?
That's it.
Did we ever cover that number 8 there, Mr. Pope, about retaining Mr.
No.
No,
we
don't.
Mr. Wilson? I think I believe it's been 2 years since we hired Mr. Wilson, and I think his time is up, and I just want to see if y'all want to continue to retain Mr. Wilson on our payroll.
What's his proposition now? Still the same or part of the same? Or?
Oh, yeah.
I'll make a motion. We'll work for sustainability.
What was the motion?
I make a motion that we continue retaining Brother Wilson.
Second.
At the same rate.
Is there a time or thing in that, or just open?
Was our last deal for a 2-year period?
2 years.
Okay, for an additional 2 years.
Okay, is that okay with you, second? Okay. We have a motion. Is there any discussion? Okay, all in favor of the motion, raise your right hand. All opposed? Okay, motion carries. Unfortunately, you get us for a while longer. I don't know if we did you any favor or not.
I really enjoy working. Playing around the Gulf Coast.
You ever get any lunch or anything out of your brother?
Nope.
Tight wad?
It goes both ways. Oh.
Okay. Who we have?
It's me.
Johnny.
Just want to mention that we had talked last time about the 100,000 CD at IBC Bank, and Mr. Lipton transferred that to TechFu. I think 2.5% interest was the best they could do at Luling, and so I think it's 2.9 or something, and I don't know what it is today.
It changes daily. So
yeah. So anyway, that has been transferred
to
TechFu. And I think Feather pretty well covered it. I might just mention it. Polonia dug a test hole out here on Frank Hines' property. It appears that they're going to be probably asking for a production permit here pretty soon. They did sample every 10 feet for feather so he could test this as it went down. And they also, of course, had the electric log. So we'll be hearing more from that in the future. I might mention that all of the dams have been had their yearly inspection this year with all of you directors. I think Sidro and I probably have to inspect some closer that we haven't got to yet. But basically all of the dams have been inspected for another year. And the paper that y'all signed this earlier in the meeting, that was for back the 06-07 year. And I think Lucy missed that year as far as checking dams that one year. So that was it. And I also was thinking about updating our QuickBooks Office accounting software that we have now, the 6.0 Pro. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, that we have 2006 QuickBooks, and we want to go to the 2009, the latest updated version, with some type of a payroll version that would fit our needs. When I visited with Mr. Jansen, our CPA, he recommended that Karen and I go to the Lockhart Cotton Gin and view their setup that they had. We went and looked at their system, and they were very helpful to us. And they also had mentioned that their system is tied in to the CPA direct, so they can look, Mr. Jansen anytime can look and see what they're doing over to Cotton Gin, make corrections if they make mistakes or that type of deal. When I called Jansen's office and talked to Debbie and asked her how she felt if we would do something like that, and she thought it was a great idea. But they would have to see, in other words, what technicality would need to be done in order to get us on the same system. So it would cost probably about $300 probably for this initial version. And then we'd have to find out exactly what other program we would need. I wouldn't think it'd be much more than that. Mr. Jansen said it'd probably take probably an hour for their technician to come over and set this program up with us here. What they were needing to know, I guess, is how much or how little access that you all wanted our CPA to have with our business here. You know, did y'all want to just limit it to what maybe the payroll, or did you, myself, I don't see where there's any problem with them having much of any access, but, you know, it's all public record, but that's up to y'all, whatever y'all decide on that.
There are some security issues that we need to work through. And I'm also looking at security, but I mean about who could hack into the system from one end or the other and how their files might become compromised by somebody working in through us or vice versa. So I don't know anything about what they've got. We do have some employee privacy issues that we'd have to figure out how to isolate things like social security numbers where people don't want them disclosed. I'd have to work through, think a little bit about it, and we all would, to look at what you're doing is allowing remote access. And I don't know how that affects the privilege that would otherwise attach if I ask you to do something. It may be waiving the privilege for you if there is a privileged inquiry related to some transaction. So those are the issues that occur to me. In terms of convenience for operating, sometimes, this is a personal view, we could get a little too anxious in favor of the convenience and lose some of the protections and security that would otherwise be in place without it.
Yeah, I'd hate for just anybody to be able to make changes and get into that thing from their end over there.
You have no control at that point.
Right.
You're responsible, but you have no control.
We wouldn't have to have
go ahead and get the program set up and everything, and it may be worth the expense to have their person come over here and show y'all how to do some things, and we could address the online thing at some later time if we think it's necessary.
Yeah, I don't think that's too much of a problem, that online deal, whether we have that or not. I mean, I don't think...
No, I mean, like him, Jansen, being
yeah,
able to get...
But I mean, I don't think we really, it's necessary we have an online deal at this point.
No.
Okay, that's fine.
Kind of what the audit is all about, too, to make sure everything is all in order.
Okay, yeah.
You have the authority to spend by the software yourself.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, yeah, I'll just...
Go do it.
Okay, but as far as how much access, he wanted me to make sure that y'all
give approval. You probably want to keep up the data on the server and not on your... And there's a way to do that, you know, where when you pull the data, you're going to the server and you're not doing...
stays just in the server and not...
Right. Yeah, you work at your workstation, but the data's all in one place, and so you don't have to... You know, it's always in the server.
It is.
Okay. Well, y'all had something about backing up to the server. Well, you wouldn't have to do that because it would all be on the server.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
You see? Yeah.
Okay, and I guess the... maybe the last thing I have here in Bob or somebody may be able to answer more questions, but I got an email through the TAG group that this groundwater conservation district, Rolling Plains, I take it it's out west somewhere, they had filed a suit, I guess, against the city because they didn't follow their rules, and I think the government courts rule that you couldn't, a groundwater district couldn't sue a municipality. Is that right?
Yeah, it's the city of Astromont case. And what happened was the city chose not to comply with the district's rules. The districts sued them, and the city defended on sovereign immunity. And they said they didn't have to comply. Technically, they have to comply. There's just no penalty if they don't. So they couldn't get a penalty. And so that forced the groundwater district to do then is to go get a court injunction compelling them to comply because they're immune from the suit on enforcement. So that's the short version.
Well, the I guess they were asking the TAG groups to all see if they could write a brief or something in support of this of the groundwater district. And they were asking all groundwater districts to contribute to this or donate to this fund. It's about $5,000 to write this brief in order for them. So I think it's been, what, about 50, Greg, already districts that I've seen on the Internet that has agreed to support and donate maybe $200 to $500, you know, toward this. And so I was just wondering if, of course, we're like, a lot of them are production fee-based, but we're a tax-based. So I was just curious if y'all wanted to support something like this, or we had kind of talked about this something in the past, you know. But do y'all feel we need to support something like this, or do you think we're not? You have any ideas, Bob? Or?
Let's get one of these every couple of months where the Association of Groundwater District is asking for participation. And the reason I know that is we occasionally get hired to do the briefs for the Association of Groundwater Districts on a particular case, or the Water Conservation Association, which is the other. And and there's nothing wrong with participating. You can if you choose to do so, but there's no obligation to choose to participate.
Yeah, some of them don't. They had no bad
they just sent the brief. And I think all it is a brief that explains that everybody on this list is supporting the outcome of the case and has an interest in it.
Right. It's frequently more than that. You can file what's called an amicus brief, where you actually analyze the issues and take a position in the case, make arguments. Yeah, you don't have to be a party to file an amicus brief.
And it so happened my board meeting fell, you know, pretty quick within a few days. So I just thought I'd see how y'all felt about it. If y'all want to,
oh, we shot a president. We could probably be sending money to anybody in all time.
Yeah.
I think you ought to pick your issues. This is not one historically that's been a problem for Plum Creek.
I think we
personnel and you pass on it, what the rest of you want to do.
Good idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think that's, I think that's all that I have.
Okay. Josh?
I don't have much report. You heard most of what I had, but, you know, a little few things in the legislature. There's a meeting I got invited to tomorrow or Thursday evening. It was Indigenous Central Texas has some green point for growth or something that they invited 40 people or 50 people to, and we got invited to that. So I'm not even 100% sure where that – I'm sure it has something to pertain to Plum Creek, but – we're getting the time of year where there's going to be a, quite a bit more going on here in the next few months, though, I'm sure. So.
Okay, Bob?
Well, I'm going to go back to the map for a minute and talk about it. And Greg, I hope you don't mind. I'm going to drift down to Gonzales County to talk about what's going on down here and the impact it has. Feather was talking about the GMA 13 stuff and how it impacts you and what's going on. What's going on down here is that SAWS has applications pending for 12,000 acre feet of water, plus or minus. And I can talk because he is a party. I represent a different party, Greg's party, Mike Munn's party, but neither of us gets to decide this. So there's nobody here that's a decision maker. There's discovery going on, and one of the things that we're trying to find out is how big this project has to be before SAWS will go forward with it or abandon. Because from the drawdown numbers that Feather mentioned, it looks to me like they're really talking about 30,000 acre feet or 40,000 acre feet or 50,000 acre feet. They're not talking about 12. And while they're talking right now about the western side of Gonzales County, what they're really trying to get most of the water from is the same eastern side of the county that all of y'all, that everybody's looking at, basically, in this area. I talked a little bit, and Feather did too, about the estimates and what you want to do on drawdown. And there was a seminar, and I think, Pam, you were there, in mid-September, talking about, there were two groundwater hydrologists there. One was a guy named Mike Thornhill, who's done some work in here, and Bob Keir, who's done some work in here also. And the discussion was, and I want to set this for you because we've talked about groundwater management plans and rules, but the discussion was, Thornhill says, there is a whole lot of water out here. And with the demand for using that water in the area, he thinks it ought to be used because it's there. The sustainability question never comes up. The water is in storage, like it's in a storage in a lake. And that's his view. And so what we're about is to empty the lake. Although it takes a really long time for the lake to fill up, we're going to be pulling the water out. He thinks that's fine. One of the other people at the conference made a statement that really caught my attention. What they said was, in effect, and this is not a quote, what we're really doing is moving water from rural areas to population centers. The effect of that is going to be to guarantee that rural areas will forever stay rural areas. So, in effect, when you start pulling water out of the ground, and if that is right, you're looking at development, but you're focusing the development in an area that would otherwise not have the water. And where you go with that is to say, in effect, these areas will never suffer that development because they won't have the opportunity because the water is not there. And I don't know who this is, but I'm going to ignore it for a minute. So what you really look at when you start looking at these choices and decisions on what you want your DFCs to be is what character you're trying to steer the area toward. Now, for some people down here, and I don't know how any of you all fall, and these are just policy things, but this is what goes into the water management plan. For some people, the fact that you could almost guarantee it's going to stay rural is a good thing. For other people, it's not a good thing. And that's one of the decisions that's going on in doing the management plan.
Greg, down at Gonzales County, they're working on a new management plan. Theirs is out of date. It expired. Ours was just renewed last year. But when these DFCs get adopted or we're working towards them, or even, quite frankly, when Gonzales County renews their management plan, we're probably going to have to take another look at ours for also to include the area down here that's annexed that is also overlapped with some of Gonzales County. So we're going to be needing to talk with them about that a good deal. They seized the initiative. They came to us and they explained what they were thinking about doing, and we appreciate that, and I wanted to tell them that. We also need to rework our rules associated with the new management plan groundwater district. We talked about that a year ago. We haven't done anything with it. And then that's all I think I want to say about groundwater. I've told you about Tri-Community, which is roughly over here. Had a conversation with Canyon Regional because Tri-Community is in the unfortunate situation of having a platted subdivision now that they can't hope to serve with their available water supply. So they've got to go out and look for water. So they're now talking to Canyon Regional, and everybody, it looks like, is moving towards getting together to sort of access available supplies while they're available, move them around while longer-term supplies are being developed. But everybody in the area of the growth corridor where we expect 130 to go also realizes that the long-term solution is going to be really expensive. And the hard fact is it will either be paid for constantly as an ongoing process, or everybody can just sit down and then boom, it'll explode, it'll drop on them, and then everybody will have to pay huge bills to catch up. There is a slow movement towards perhaps doing some things to see if we can graduate the kind of increase, the steepness of the curve that would otherwise take place, but there's a lot of resistance to that. Paul knows about the resistance. I mean, nobody wants to pay more for water now, although everybody, if we get to the situation where you get one of these huge developments, everybody has to pay a lot more then. So the question is, do you want to start ramping up? Those are the kinds of issues that are going on the supply side, where Plum Creek, if it chose to do so, might be able to actually participate and see if it can help solve those problems. You have the power to do that. There's no obligation to do it. There's no duty to do it. But the opportunity is there. But the districts, the water supply corporations are starting to get together. We are starting to look more regionally. All those are good things. And with that said, I'm going to switch to the surface side. If you remember, and I'll just mention this briefly, a month or so ago, we had an inquiry having to do with Site 9 from the property owner. Haven't heard anything more about that, so I don't know what's going on. And finally, y'all gave me citation for a couple of condemnation, or actually for one condemnation case. Looks like it's up north along 183 somewhere, from what I can tell, and I have no idea why Plum Creek was issued citation.
They have to serve all that to all taxing entities that have authority over that piece of property, because you're actually entering on this, don't make the parents or anything, but they're going to collect the money for you and send up, but you have to be named in it too. And they said we will be getting a lot of those.
Is this for SH-130?
Yes.
Condemnation? Oh. Yeah.
They said there's more coming.
There's none of our property that's being condemned. It's just a condemnation that they notify the taxing entity.
Right.
That there is a condemnation going on because of the impact.
We didn't have to sign anything. They just have to. They had to serve me with the papers.
It's not crossing our easement.
And he said there would be more coming.
I was looking for, and the description in the documents do not indicate that one of our easements is being crossed, because it's up on 183 in one of those oak something subdivision places. Up north. Okay.
No, they indicated to me it's just because we're a taxing entity on the property, but we don't have any legal part as far as easements or anything other than the taxing entity.
Well, I know we get a lot of those. We'll probably get a lot of those because Paul
you indicated that you've got 81 tracks that are being affected.
83, I think.
83? So we'll get a lot more of them.
There are 350 tracks between 183 and 10.
But well, we fortunately don't get, we don't tax all of those.
So. No. But he said we would, he know that we'll be getting some more. So.
All right. That's all I have.
Okay. Any public comments? Anybody want to make a statement?
Hi, I have a question. My name's Carol Coleman. In your statements before about the expanding your area to go before the session, are you talking about the areas that are not included in our annexed area to Gonzales?
Well, that's what I was talking about.
That's what I'm saying. Are you talking about other areas, or are you talking about the area that's already been annexed into Gonzales also?
No, I was talking about areas that are
not in any zone.
So that's a groundwater.
There's a section up there around Martindale area, and there's a section out east.
The wide areas down
there.
No, it had nothing to do with y'all.
Okay.
Now, the unusual thing would, of course, be that this part would be the WCNID, and the rest of the areas would, this would be the only part of the county that would not be in a WCNID at that point.
Okay. Thanks.
It would be in a groundwater district, but not in a WCNID.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. I guess the next item we need to do, we have a personnel evaluation that we promised to do. And for item 7, we'll go back to that. How do we want to do that? In executive session, or?
I don't think we can.
Huh?
Depends on who it is. Personnel, city employee, you can. If it's a contract person, you can.
It's employees. That's who we're evaluating 90 days.
Oh, employees.
Yeah.
Okay.
We told them we'd evaluate the deal in 90 days, and it's a little over, but that's just for the employees.
Give this back to you.
Yeah, give back to the, yeah, let me give it to the office and start a file on that. Oh, we can do it open. We'll stay in open session on this, I think. I don't think it's anything. Anything you need to talk to us about private time?
I guess not. I'll be fine.
If you want to.
No, I heard of you. That's fine. Anyway, you don't do it, it's fine.
We want y'all to go. Otherwise, we got to go in the executive session.
Oh, I don't know what you want to do. Executive session?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, anyway,
we'll go into executive session.
So you want us to leave?
Yeah, y'all step out and we'll call you back in.
Stay or go?
Go.
All right.
But
get water. They don't camp.
We'll do that first next time.
Sorry. I need to lock you out.
That's all right.